It's time for Heat Wave Sports. Sit back and relax as you take a tour around the world of sports each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And now, your hosts for Heat Wave Sports, Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
And a wonderful Sunday night, Las Vegas. Welcome. It's Heat Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Tim Unglesby, Damon the Boss Cotton, with you from the Lotus Broadcast Studios. And you're in for a treat tonight. It's the Sunday night edition of Heat Wave Sports. That means you get 3 hours. 3 hours of Tim, Damon, and of course, my co-host in crime, who we are wrangling up right now. So I'll save the introduction of the well-known gentleman for just a few minutes. Plenty going on in the world of sports. I say this every week, plenty going on in the world of sports, because there really never is a time when there's not something going on in the world of sports. Very facetious, I know, but that is me. And we have plenty going on. Week 10 of the NFL. We have the college football rankings coming out tomorrow, coming off the heels of, they called it an upset, but I know the gentleman joining me right now didn't think that way at all. It's Sunday night, Tom. You're with me. Tom Barton, TomBartonSports.com. It's just like old times, my man.
It is like old times, Tim. Excuse the background noise as I am getting home from, or I'm coming home from Atlantic City. So spent the weekend in one of the sports betting capitals of the world. I'm not going to say that they've overtaken it, although other people have said that. And you're there, so it's kind of the perfect show to have on a Sunday night.
What's the commute time-wise?
If I go exactly the speed limit, like 3.5 hours.
Well, that's perfect, then, right?
I should be home just about by the time the show's ending.
I said that's perfect. You know, a lot of times when you go on these longer drives, you know, you can only listen to music so long, or sports talk radio, or politics on the radio, and then all of a sudden it seems like it's dragging, but you'll actually be able to do a show and get home and not even think about it.
That's what I planned, you know. Thinking about it, talking to you, it's a beautiful thing.
Let's start with the college side of it, because I know you weren't on last night. You were busy taking care of business, and we didn't get your thoughts on this, that it was deemed upset Saturday, but I know you and I disagreed on that, and we didn't think they were as big as upsets as people were trying to make them out to be.
No, not really. I mean, look, you know, when we sit around and you talk about the situation of Upset Saturday, everybody wants to point to one game, right? And that's one game where you have LSU beating Alabama. That's the upset. LSU beat an Alabama team that they were basically the same sort of ranked team, right? I mean, what's the difference between 1 and 2? Not really a lot. And LSU beat the team with the probable Heisman Trophy winner in Burrow. They beat a team without Tua 100%. You can tell me all you want. I got notifications from Alabama for the last week that said he was not right and he probably shouldn't have played in the game. And it was a 6-point spread. Yeah, but I mean, technically, was it an upset? Sure, technically it was an upset. But let's be honest. It wasn't this great, huge upset that we'll be talking about for generations. I mean, you know, calm down. And it's the hype machine. You know, it is college football is so absolutely just normal now that the regulars, the favorites, just cruise, that when something happens a little bit weird, Tim, all of a sudden it's this great upset. Oh, my God, the entire week was an upset. Me and you understand that's not reality.
Right, and you're correct in saying that. What's the difference between a ranking of 1 and 2? We know that the upset in my mind is, of course, played out over television, over radio, where they want to say that there's this mythical aura around Alabama that they're unstoppable, even though we just saw them get beat in the title game last year.
Well, you also have to ask yourself, get into the position of Alabama. if you put these teams on the field right now against other teams, I think LSU is about the even money number, right? I mean, this is before they played. It wasn't that they were expansive differently, meaning if you took LSU against Clemson, I'm not talking about the money line or the spread, because when we start getting into the spread, that is how will the public will react. But is LSU better than Clemson by a touchdown? Probably not quite a touchdown. Is Alabama over Clemson by a touchdown? Not quite. Is Ohio State and LSU? They're about the same team. And when you're right, listen, Alabama lost last year. When Alabama gets pressed to have to play a real team, well, what have we seen? They come up short here for the last couple of years. They play a very, and I know you SEC fans are going to jump all over me, Alabama plays a very favorable schedule, a very weak schedule. They design their schedule. They have bye weeks before they play the big teams, the big rivals. They design their schedule where they play Louisiana Monroe's of the world before their big teams. And if when you're designing your schedule like that, and then all of a sudden you lose to a good team for the second year in a row, I think it's fair to ask, are we just talking about Alabama through experience at this point and through what we think they should be, not what they actually are?
So after all said and done, and that was the, you know, LSU comes out and ends this losing streak that they have against Bama, and of course we saw Penn State go down to Minnesota. Those were the two big upsets that everybody was talking about. Now we have the college football rankings. The first ones come out Monday or Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday, if not tomorrow, yeah, Tuesday. So we kind of know where at least we assume what we think the top four are going to be. When you look at what happens here the next couple weeks, because LSU, barring some type of massive collapse, the schedule's very favorable for them up into the SEC title game, which right now appears to be Georgia would be the opponent. So if you lock them in, right, and you lock in Clemson, which I think is going to be able to go through the rest of their schedule unscathed, where does that leave us 3, 4, 5? Because you know where I'm kind of going with this, Tom, with the loss yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, where you're going is the nightmare that all of us do not want to have. And the nightmare is that Alabama and LSU will have two SEC teams in the title game.
Yeah.
And I've continued to ask, why? Why is the SEC still getting love like they were 10 years ago, right? Why is the SEC still getting looked at like they were 10 years ago? They're not the team anymore. They're not the conference anymore, I should say. They're just not. And you're right. Clemson should generally cruise here. Ohio State will get in. Ohio State is a team that should generally cruise to a playoff berth. And then LSU really just got a playoff berth at this point just by winning yesterday. So where we're sitting at here, Tim, is that do we believe that Oklahoma can hang on? And if we don't believe Oklahoma can hang on, right? Who else can hang on? I don't think the Pac-12 has anyone, right? I don't believe that the Pac-12 has anybody that can compete. So some conference is going to get a bid here, Tim, and the conference is probably the SEC. But I don't need that much of an impact. I think that's how it was designed and set up most of this year, don't you?
It seems to be that way, yeah. And we've talked about this over the years. We've seen the Big 12 being left at you know, without a date to the dance. We've seen the Pac-12 because of what is regarded as a weak conference not even be included in the mix. And it's an argument we've had for the last, what, 5, 6 years. And if it plays out how I think it plays out, we'll be talking about it again. And the last time this happened with Alabama, they went on to win the national title.
They won. This has happened, and I've told you this stat quite a bit. In the last 9 years now, it was 101 years. There had never been a team in the history of college football that has lost their conference title game, has not been to their conference title game, I should say. Yet we're playing in the national championship. Mm-hmm. In 109 years, it had not happened. Alabama lost to LSU, didn't play in a conference title game. Alabama won the championship. That happened again. So now we're looking at, I think it's about 109 years. And 109 years of college football, it has now happened twice, and it has been Alabama both times.
And you've become numb to it, though, because you expect it.
Remember how angry I used to be on the FM?
Yeah.
You remember how angry and annoyed and why I was like, I expected it. Not only do I expect it, how about this, though, Tim? Here's an interesting question for you that I've got off the out of you. And you want to get mad and say, oh, forget about the FCC. How about the FCC gets the FCC? Let's say, okay, you have an Oklahoma undefeated, an Ohio State undefeated, a Clemson undefeated. Let's say that's what you have. And then LSU goes out there, and LSU loses to Georgia. Who do you put in the championship game? Do you put Georgia, who won? Do you put LSU? Do they somehow or another find a way to put Alabama in there? And if one of these other teams loses, could we have a position that legitimately says, hey, wait a minute, there's going to be three SEC teams, two SEC teams, and Alabama sneaks in instead of LSU? I can see it, Tim. I can completely see Alabama still sneaking into the playoff picture, LSU losing the championship game and not going to the playoff, even though they beat Alabama, and watch the chaos ensue. So this isn't only an anti-SEC situation. This is an anti-college football playoff situation.
We actually joked about that last night. I had asked Chris, I said, if LSU loses in the SEC title game, does Alabama go? And he looked me dead straight in the face. He said, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that's going to happen. And
yeah, 100%, and that's the shame. I mean, you're LSU, you're sitting back, and if you were anybody else but Alabama, anybody else, your season last night ended.
Right.
But because it's Alabama, you go, ah, we get a mulligan.
Where do you think, and DeMond actually made a joke about this on the update last night, and he said the first step to increasing the teams in the National College Football Playoff happened today when Alabama lost, because there always want to be a way that Nick Saban's going to create business for himself, Tom, and if they don't make the playoff this year, you better believe that that's going to be thrown to the forefront quicker than it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this might be an overly good thing. Reason why we have, in part, why we have a college football playoff was because the SEC believes, and this is not from my mouth, guys, this is not from my thinking, this is from reality thinking when they had meetings. The SEC believes that at all times, the two best teams in the country will be in the SEC. They have said that. Saban has said that he believes that the SEC is such a dominant conference that at all times, they should always have two teams in the college football playoffs. Well, the other conferences are sick of this. They're sick of hearing this, right? If you're Oklahoma, why is the Big 12 less? Why is the Big 10 less? The Big 10 has better teams, top to bottom, better teams in almost every aspect of the sport. They have better teams. Why are you going to take this if you're a team like Ohio State or if you're a team like Oklahoma? Well, because it's Nick Saban, and because Saban says so. So while this is bad, you could have a one-loss Alabama team from the outside looking in, and that might actually help the idea of let's expand the college football playoff.
Well, let's kind of look at next week, because there was going to be some undefeated teams, possibly that at least one, but that find their first loss, and it's going to thin this group out again, and we know this is how it usually happens towards the end of the season, Tom. But speaking of the SEC, Georgia, which leads their division, Florida chasing, on the road at Auburn, and a field goal favorite in this one, and it's a dangerous spot for Georgia, which I don't think, you know, they looked good against, I thought, a subpar Missouri team. They looked bad the week before that. It's just like, it's not a Georgia team that we've seen in the past, which you're like, man, they're really good until they get to the SEC title game, it seems like, or better yet, get screwed in the national title game. But, you know, this is a potential bump here for Georgia, because Auburn, which people think should have been battling for this, is kind of falling back, but they're right outside the top 10, and they're still dangerous. They can run the ball like no other.
Yeah, you know, Georgia is one of those strange teams that I think we can just replay what we say for the last, decade, right? Georgia is among the most talented teams in the country.
They just don't put it together. And this year I see a lot of the same, don't you? That the talent level is exceedingly there. But Jake Fromm is a guy that I can see, you know, winning the SEC title game. I can see him elevating his game. They have the coaching that I do like. But Tim, when you don't show up for a game that you have to win, and you're a powerhouse in the NCAAs, it's a problem. And the problem with Georgia is that it's not a one-time thing, right? This is a, you know, this is like just past, though. You can change the coach. You can change the culture. What we could say about Georgia, year in and year out, day in and day out, year, week in and week out, they are more talented than the opponent across the field in 99% of the games. It's just, can they pull out a win? And unfortunately, where I look at Georgia is that no, they can't.
You think Jake Fromm is NFL material?
You know, I mean, it's a loaded question with him, right? Because I believe, and I know people jump on me all the time, I'm still not sure that Patrick Mahomes was NFL material if he had gone into a situation. And I'm not comparing, for example, Mitch Trubisky with Patrick Mahomes. But if Jake Fromm goes into a situation like the Chicago Bears, and he has three offensive coordinators in his first 3 years, mm-hmm. and he has weak weapons, and he's playing, you know, outdoors in a cold weather place, and he's not getting any support, well, no, I don't think Jake Fromm is a NFL quarterback. But if Jake Fromm gets a cushy situation like Patrick Mahomes, gets an Andy Reid calling the plays, and he gets, you know, Kelsey and Hill and all of that comes with it, yeah, I think he can succeed. I don't think Jake Fromm is a superstar, but I think Jake Fromm can be, well, I'll give you a comparison of what I believe he can be. There's a slight and it's not. I think he can be Ryan Tannehill, and that's not an insult to Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill is a solid NFL quarterback. He got stuck with a million different coaches, and I think now in Tennessee, he is a starting quarterback at this level. I believe that he's a solid quarterback. I think Jake Fromm could be that. He could be a 3-4-5 year starter that has medium success depending on where he goes. The good news for Jake Fromm is he probably will wind up in a favorable situation. He's probably a guy that we're looking at and will wind up with a decent team. He's not going to go to the Bengals or the Dolphins, right? He's going to go to a solid organization. And you go to a solid organization, you're able to have no pressure on your shoulders. I think Jake Fromm could be a pretty decent quarterback.
Kind of, you know, maybe I'm just playing in fantasy world here, but I could see him wearing some Patriot colors there.
Patriots make sense. I know that they like this kid, you know, Stidham now. The Patriots make a lot of sense, though. You know, I'll give you a good scenario for a guy like Jake Fromm. How about a place, you know, like Atlanta, maybe? It has Matt Ryan, you're not sure, you know, what you're going to get out of Matt Ryan for the next couple of years. How about a place, you know, like you said New England. How about a place like Green Bay, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a place like Green Bay where you get to sit for a year and you'll be okay, but you need coaching. And I think Jake Fromm needs coaching.
How about this Big 12 matchup? Oklahoma at Baylor, Tommy, the Bears still undefeated, the Baylor Bears undefeated, and they've been doing it by the skin of their teeth. Oklahoma didn't look very good against Iowa State. This could be the first time these two teams meet because they could be playing again for the Big 12 title game, and I think here's where the Big 12 screws themselves, is that Baylor loses this game, Tom, and somehow finds a way to win in the Big 12 title game. They're left out.
Yeah, it's a little crazy to me because I liked Baylor before the year. You remember me talking about that quarterback? He's a kid. I kind of, you know, into him. I thought they were flying on the radar. I never expected them to be undefeated at this point, though. I never expected that, these kind of results. But you're right. The Big 12 has repeatedly screwed themselves. And you know what the committee tells you? Screw you. Yeah, that you screwed us, and we're going to screw you over. You know, I mean, that's what they have told anybody for the Big 12. They have repeatedly said, because you don't have a championship game, we're not giving you credit. Because you don't have this, we're not going to do this. And we're in a position where, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is a position that you look at a to Baylor, and they're going to be the team from the outside looking in that we're sitting back and we're going. And that's the team I'm going to stand on my milk crate and argue about, right? Because I don't think they're getting in no matter what they do here.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, if they're undefeated, it's harder. It doesn't mean that they wouldn't screw them, trust me. But if they're undefeated, I think it's a little bit harder to do. But I see them losing this game this weekend on their home field. And
But who do you think is going to be taking, though, Tim? One loss Alabama or one loss LSU, who loses a championship game to Georgia, let's say,
mm-hmm.
or are they taking Baylor at undefeated? I think that they look for the SEC there.
Yeah, I agree. These next games, they should be wins. I don't see upsets in these, but just your thoughts quickly, because they're surrounded around the teams that are going to be in that mix. And like I said, when we see the four that come out Tuesday, we'll get a better look at it. But I'm just assuming these are W's here. LSU coming off the big win, Tom. They're at Ole Miss, big favorite here. I don't see an upset. You see maybe a emotional letdown, though. Closer game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there has to be an emotional letdown, but they're not going to lose the game. You know, this is a spot where you've got to be careful. You know, but listen, I will also say this. If you are the number one team in the country, and if you are that team that wants to be taken serious, you don't have emotional letdown. You go out onto the field, you take care of your business. I don't know if they're going to cover the spread, but you don't have that breakdown. You know who has that breakdown? Teams that shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
Teams that shouldn't be in this spot. Teams that don't really belong to be in this spot. That's who has those breakdowns and those mental lapses. Now, I would like nothing more to tell you that Ole Miss is going to win the game. I'm rooting for chaos. So I'd love Ole Miss to win the game. But I think LSU is just too talented. They're playing on too good of a level. Their head coaches, I mean, this guy's a character, but he knows how to coach. Burrow, I think, won the Heisman last night, and they just have too much. They will be points in that game that you're concerned about LSU, but in the end, they're not losing that game.
About Ohio State, I'm going to actually throw the line at you on this one because I want to get your thoughts. Ohio State at Rutgers, 51, minus 51.
I think you got to take Ohio State. Rutgers is absolutely pathetic this year, or forever. But Rutgers is really, really, really bad. I don't know if Rutgers scores a point here, and you got to question yourself and say, can Ohio State put up 52? I don't think they have a problem with that. This is one of those classic November games that no one bets, no one pays attention to, and you look up at the score and you see like 73-3. You know what I mean? This mm-hmm. is one of those type of crazy games that people are going to be the sports books. Oh my God! Did you see what happened? Did you see what happened? I think that look. I'm not. I will not take Ohio State. I'll be the first one to tell you. TomBortonSports.com went 5-0 this weekend. I'd love to go 5-0. Again next weekend on college football. This will not be on my card. But if there's a bet to be made, there's only one bet to be made. That's only just lay the points for Ohio State.
Tom, I'm going to tease it down to 44. What do you think?
Don't tease anything, Tim.
Number 3, Clemson, Wake Forest. This will be played in Death Valley. 32.5. Wake Forest is a terrible loss last week to Virginia Tech.
You know, Wake Forest is a good team, though. Mm-hmm. They really are. I think that Wake Forest is a team that can hang around in this game. I don't think that they're beating Clemson. But Clemson has the look of a team that is just going through the motions right now. And that's not necessarily to insult them. They just look like a team that they don't care. Just get us to the college football playoff. This is what the committee members by installing the college football playoff. They were concerned that the regular season games kind of wouldn't mean anything, right? I mean, that's what they were worried about. Well, here we are, Tim. Clemson is going through the motions. They know as long as they squeak out wins. I kind of like Wake Forest here. You said it. They're coming off of an ugly loss. They're getting a boatload of points. To me, Wake Forest is the second-best team in the ACC. I think they've been the second-best team in the ACC most of the year. I know it's shocking for people to know that, but they are. And the second-best team, or at least arguably the second-best team,
with 32 points, I'll take Wake Forest the points.
This next one, I know a lot of people are already talking about betting the favorite, and that's the team we just talked about in Alabama, 3-touchdown favorite on the road at Mississippi State.
Yeah, everybody expects Alabama to have this massive bounce back, right? Everybody expects Alabama to, oh my God, they're going to be angry. They're going to come out. They're going to squash this. They're going to do that. I don't know. Then there's the other side to that. There's the other side to the coin of they're going to come out and be all angry. There's the side of the coin of most of these people, or most of these players, have no idea how to bounce back from a loss. They've never had to do it. Most of these players on this team have no idea how to handle adversity. They also might be sulking. You know, you get angry in spots. Sure. Okay, you know what? I'm angry. I want to come out. I want to beat this team because I'm in a bad mood. But you also get the idea of, oh, my God, did we just lose the national championship? Do we have a way to play ourselves back into the national championship? There might be some dragging feet there. I would stay away from this game.
Penn State back at Happy Valley against Indiana, 2-touchdown favorite. They're technically still alive, Tom. You know, they're not eliminated from either race. That's the Big Ten or the college football playoff. What's your thoughts here? We've seen teams kind of lose a game and then just fall back, and all of a sudden, they, you know, as fate has it, finds themselves an opportunity to play in a New Year's Day bowl.
You know, I didn't think Penn State was very good in the beginning of that game. I didn't buy into Penn State, and I'm not going to buy into them now. So I'm not putting any faith in them.
All right, how about the Pac-12? You got Oregon, you got Utah, seemingly on that collision course, both 3-touchdown favorites this weekend at home, both of them.
You know, Oregon's that team that if their quarterback is playing well, and he is a fantastic quarterback, then he will, you know, and Oregon's got a chance to beat anybody in the country. And I really believe that. I believe Oregon can beat anyone in the country if, you know, quarterback's playing well. That quarterback usually does. I think Oregon's a tough team.
All right, we'll do one more and take the time out, and I'll throw it in this just because it's Vegas perspective. Hawaii coming to Sam Boyd Stadium to take on UNLV. The Rainbow's a touchdown favorite Saturday.
I love this offense. I absolutely love how Hawaii can push the ball. It's back to being high-flying Hawaii. I just don't think UNLV has enough to be competitive here. And I'm not even only talking about, you know, the -7 by Hawaii. Look, the old story is that they can't go on the road and win. Well, Hawaii's gone on the road and won. And don't look into that San Jose State game. That San Jose State's a good team.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be high scoring. I think the over-under should be set at about 80 here, okay? And I think Hawaii probably wins the game by double digits.
Tom, when we come back, we want to discuss the Florida State opening because a lot of big names are being thrown about here, and I know you have... I'm going to say you have kind of the inside scoop on this, and I want to get your thoughts on that. And also a job opening today in the SEC. Maybe you could throw some names around for that Arkansas opening as Chad Morris released from the program this afternoon. You're listening to the Sunday night edition of Heatwave Sports here on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM.
You must show us some respect.
It's a seesaw battle. Neither offense can move. Colts driving now with the ball. Armadillos better stop them. Now, how could the ref call that? It was a clean kick to the face mask.
Guys going in.
Illegal contact. Number 51. Senkutsu elbow thrust to the upback. Oimowatsu roundhouse lunge kick to the quarterback. Takatami answord block to the... Never mind. 15 yards. First down.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
We are back. Heatwave Sports. Tim and Tom, the OGs, with you on a Sunday night. Tom, we're talking college football, and an SEC job opening today as Arkansas released Chad Morris from his contract. They owe him $10 million throughout the rest of it. And, you know, I understand that it was coming. When you go 4-18 in less than 2 years, 0-14 in the SEC, you know, in just 7 years' time, this was an 11-win team, now down to an ugly, ugly thing there for Arkansas fans. And my question, first question would be, why now? You know, you obviously want to get in before the early signing period. You want to have another coach in place because you don't want kids just jumping off the recruiting trail here. But are they going to be able to fill this spot in time to do this?
No, it's bad timing to fire a coach anytime. You know, and I get it. Look, fan bases get restless. You want to get into your recruiting and whatnot. I just think it's a stupid decision by a college to fire a coach this late in the year before the bowl games. What you want to do is you want to fire him, you know, when the year concludes, or if you are going to a bowl game, or have a chance to represent at a bowl game, I should say, because you're not going to be going if you fire your coach. Have a chance to represent there. You want to have your new coach. Let's talk. Let's get him on the sidelines at the Northwest game and the Senior Bowl and all that. I get all of those kind of things to have the glad ending. I still just don't understand what is Arkansas. Two games left, you know what I mean? With one or two games left in the season, why fire your coach? Unless you really want to get out of front of the recruiting, it doesn't make sense timeline.
And in my mind, if you're going to get out in front of the recruiting, you need to have a big name hire. And I'm going to just throw the names out at you that are supposedly, I don't know if it's a wish list or it's just rumor mill, but Mike Norvell, the head coach over at Memphis, it, right now sitting on top of many so-called experts' lists, Bill Clark over at UAB, Appalachian State coach, Drinkwitz, his name's popped up, and a guy that we're going to talk about with our next school, he seems like his name's always in the mix for an SEC job, Mike Leach.
Mike Leach should get a job. The problem is, if you're Mike Leach, and I get it, listen, my SEC, anti-SEC bias will show here, but is there really a massive difference between Pullman, Washington, and Arkansas? I mean, Pullman and Fayetteville, is there real? Tim, to me, it's a lateral move. As a matter of fact, I believe you have a better chance of winning a national title in Washington State.
Right.
I believe that you can steal a Pac-12 bid and potentially get to a playoff. At Arkansas, that's a slow build. And Mike Leach should absolutely 100% get a job, a bigger job, get a probably, like you said, an SEC job. I don't think Arkansas is the answer. Arkansas has been a solid program at times. But when you look at the landscape of college football, and now with paying the athletes, you're going to have the few elite teams. And we know the elite college football programs. The elite college football programs of the Michigans, Ohio State, Notre Dame, USC, Texas, Alabama. Those are the elites. He's not going there. And now he's got to compete against there. Notice how, really, when you talk about a Mike Leach kind of situation, I don't know if you're talking about an Arkansas. I think you're talking more of a big-time school that it could be a step up. I'm not bashing on Arkansas here, but if I'm Mike Leach, I'm not taking that job. I'll wait for something bigger.
I kind of agree with you on that because if you look at Mike Leach and look, if you like offense, you want Mike Leach. You want that guy. But we just saw him last year, Tom. He went as far as he went to Knoxville, interviewed for the job at Tennessee, and decided to stay at Washington State. His name was thrown around in the job opening at Maryland. You know, it's almost like Mike Leach.
Right. Is Tennessee a bigger job in Arkansas? I think it is.
Yeah, I think
so. And he already turned it down.
Right. I think sometimes he just likes his name out there. But you're right. He's waiting on the big gig. And taking an entry-level coaching job at, like you said, Arkansas, where it's a slow rebuild, he probably doesn't have time for that in his mind. That if anything, it's going to hurt him more than it'll help him.
Yeah, I don't know if Mike Leach has his targeted, top six or seven schools, the teams that I just mentioned. the elites of college football. I don't think if he has his heart set on one of those, but that next level of team, that next level of competition, the next level being, you know, the Florida State, you know, the Oklahomas of the world. Listen, if Lincoln Riley leaves for the NFL, how good would Mike Leach be on the sidelines of that offense?
That would be a no-brainer, right?
Right.
Sign me up.
So I think he's looking at this and saying to himself, I'm going to have my pick of the litter. I just have to wait this year.
So the opening right now that probably has the most prestige, and I say right now because I think the USC job opens up with Clay Helton being run out after the bowl game anyways. But
yeah, the USC job is the number one job opening right now. Absolutely. Right.
But Florida State now, for right now, Florida State would be the most prestigious as far as legacy program. Willie Taggart now gone. That didn't work out for him. So the names being thrown about, Tom, it's very interesting in that you have a great take on a couple of these names. And the big one was Bob Stoops, the former Oklahoma guy. Right now, the general manager and the head coach of the Dallas Renegades in the XFL, which hasn't even played a game yet. And then in the earlier this week, Primetime's name was thrown about as being a potential candidate, and he just came out via Sports Illustrated and said that he has not been contacted by him. But we know how that goes, Tom. So kind of just open this job search up for us, and in your mind, what the direction is that the Florida State administration is going to do here.
Yeah, listen, Florida State's at a crossroads right now. Florida State desperately wants to, and they were heading in the direction to be one of the college football elites. They are just a notch below. And they're just a notch below as far as, you know, like you said, prestige, as far as you said, money-wise. They're just a notch below. But they're not that far off. You know, this is still a program that is recruiting in Florida. I think it is a terrible job, the Florida State head coaching job, for Deion Sanders. And me and you talked about this a little bit. One of the reasons I did not want Don Mattingly to coach the New York Yankees is eventually, if you hire Don Mattingly to coach the New York Yankees, you hire an icon, you eventually have to fire that icon.
Mm-hmm.
Deion Sanders is everything Florida State. I think it's not far off a realm to say that Deion Sanders is the most celebrated, the most popular, and you know, the face of Florida State football forever. He's their best player that they've ever had, and he's outspoken about it. He's everything Florida State wants. He is. Problem is, what if Deion comes in there and he doesn't perform, and he doesn't win? Well, now that's a problem. You're going to eventually have to fire Deion even if he does win. Everything goes bad. Look, Bobby Bowden was let go, right? I mean, in sports, the job you're taking is eventually the job you're going to be fired from. And you don't want to destroy an icon. From Deion's perspective, listen, I think he would succeed there because he could walk into kids' houses and say, I'm Primetime, you're signing with me and not to Florida. I'm Primetime, you're signing with me and not to Miami Hurricanes. I think he could do that. Deion would have to go get a really good coaching staff around him, and I believe that he's smart enough to do that. I just don't think it's a good job for Deion Sanders. The Florida State job as a whole is a dicey job. You have a fan base that's restless, that had an absolute icon be replaced by a guy that they felt, you know, kind of left them at the altar a little, right? You have to come in there, and you win 8 games with Florida State, that's not a good year. The bar is set to a near elite level. When we're sitting back and we're talking about a coach like a Bob Stoops, this makes a lot of sense. Bob Stoops makes perfect sense. He makes perfect sense because he just told me that he likes rebuild. I mean, he said, I like to rebuild programs. That's what he does. That's what he does well. The rebuild. Florida State needs a rebuild. They need to reaffirm who they are. They need to reaffirm that they are one of college football's best programs out there. That they can win, that they can do well, that they can turn this around and start competing with Clemson. They need that facelift. Right now, what is the idea of Florida State? Florida State's been called Funk University. They're getting back into a bad situation where they were, if you remember, in the 90s. where movies are being made about them, right? They're getting back into that spot, except they're not winning now. So Florida State needs a quick turnaround. Deion Sanders is a splashy name. Deion Sanders will recruit. Deion Sanders, though, the hiring of him could hurt you more than help. Bob Stoops, I think Bob Stoops is a fantastic name. And I'll tell you what, we just talked about Mike Leach. I think Mike Leach at Florida State would be phenomenal. The problem is the Florida State fan base might not enjoy his antics as much as some around the rest of the country would.
So let me ask you this question then. And we just talked about 40 days away from the early signing period. It's not like it used to be when it was February and everybody signed on the same day, Tom. Now you have five-star athletes signing early and enrolling in college early. If you and I are in agreeance, and again, we're sitting on the other side, if you and I are in agreeance that Bob Stoops is an absolute perfect fit there, what's the holdup in this happening?
Well, here's the situation, Dave. I'll give it to you two ways. Number one, Bob Stoops may not want to come right now. He might want to take his one-year XFL Dallas paycheck, which I'm sure is a nice and healthy paycheck, and then get back into college football. He may not want to go to Florida State. Listen, Florida State's got a lot of positives. Florida State's got some negatives. And I can tell you how dysfunctional that school is being run right now, how horrendously that school is being run by the question you just asked. How do you fire Willie Taggart and not immediately hire someone else? We talk about it year after year on this station. If you're going to fire a coach, you have to tell me who the replacement's going to be. Florida State fires a coach without a replacement in place. That means the head of the state is making wrong decisions. They're making bad calls. The administration is not doing things the right way. You are Florida State. You're supposed to be one of the elites of college football. You can't fire Willie Taggart 2 weeks later, still not have a head coach in signing and ready to go. Deion Sanders said, contact him. This is not UNLV, guys. This is Florida State. Unfortunately, yeah, this is Florida State, and that's the problem.
And just to close on FSU, Willie Taggart came up under John Harbaugh, most notably at Stanford, and then had a nice run at South Florida, a year at Oregon, and FSU gave him the job, Tom, and I know you had promise for him there. Was this something that, do we blame the administration? Do we blame Willie Taggart as not being able to be that guy? Did he recruit poorly? I mean, it just didn't go well for him, and you know, he didn't even last two full seasons.
Well, I'm going to give Florida State a little bit of credit because they pulled the plug when they needed to on him. But look, some guys just can't coach at that level, and Willie Taggart could not coach at that level. I don't think that is a bad thing to say about Willie Taggart. You know, right now, where Florida State is in recruiting, they're struggling in Florida. They're losing recruits to Miami. We heard about the whole situation where the Miami head coach crashed the hotel party that Willie Taggart was throwing and was stealing recruits away. They lost recruits to Miami. They're losing recruits to the Gators. They're losing recruits to UCF. I mean, that's where Florida State is. And Willie Taggart was a guy that should have walked in. But you know what? A lot of this is still Jimbo, man. Jimbo left this team in shambles. I'm not going to sit here and bash Willie Taggart. I think a lot of this was the administration. And when he was hired, I said, you know, I think it's a good hire. I like the guy. I think he's a guy that can recruit. He is a Florida State alumni. But he's another guy that, and you know, I say this about UNLV basketball, so I'm pretty honest both ways here, Tim. I like coaches. I know that there's a lot more in the college game than just coaching. There is recruiting. There is the fact that you have 25, bosses because you have all the big boosters. You have to go, look the part. I get all of that. I still like a coach. I like a coach to just be a coach. And Willie Taggart was trying to be more than just a coach. If Bob Stoops comes here, he's going to try to be more than just a coach. Deion Sanders is more than just a coach. How about going in, like you just said? How about going in and go get the guy from Appalachian State, right?
Yeah.
That guy could coach football, man. That's a football coach right there. Now, they're not going to do it because Florida State couldn't go get a no-name and actually might know how to coach. Look, I'll give you a perfect example of T.J. Fleck. Look at what he just did. This guy could coach, man. We knew how good of a coach he was. And all he's done is coach really well. That would have been a perfect fit. The schools that decide to go for the big name and the big splash, instead of going out and trying to build something long-term and build something with a young guy that can actually go out there and build a program, I think they're doing it wrong. But I think Florida State absolutely will make that mistake here.
And I have to ask it because I love to get your opinion. I don't think it changes much in that what should have been done versus what is going to be done. And I'm talking about the UNLV job. And what's funny, Tom, is that yesterday I was covering the men's game. I also cover the Lady Rebels, so they played a doubleheader, and I stayed after and sat in the Thomas Mack Center right behind the Lady Rebel bench. And right before the game started, a lady and a gentleman sat down behind me. And mind you, there's like 300 people in the arena, right? It's Desiree Reed, it's Desiree, you know, the AD at UNLV, sitting right behind me. You don't know how much it took me not to just kind of lean back and say, Desiree, what's going on with Tony Sanchez? You can tell me. I'll protect your source.
You should have told him. You should have said, yeah, listen, what kind of pictures does Coach Sanchez have on blackmail against you guys? Because I don't know how he's still got a job here.
So even if they win out, they finish under 500 again. They're not going to win out. We know that. Is it safe to say? I don't even know how to preface this. Can we say he's not going to be here, or do you really believe that because of the money he's invested in the facilities that just opened? So that football facility, that the training facility that they worked on getting all that donation money for, quote unquote donation money, just opened 2 months ago. Tom, they're really going to run him out of town after he brought in that nice big rich facility?
He's not going anywhere, Tim. I used to joke around with you, and I used to say that. In his contract, it said, I don't have to win a game until we get the new stadium.
Right.
I used to say that jokingly. I think those words might actually be in the contract. I mean, it's possible that that's actually written into the contract, that it didn't matter what he did before next year. Now, I do think he's got to win. I think he's got to win in the new stadium. I believe that. But I don't think it matters. You can't tell me that the day that when Sanchez was hired and we said, here are the benchmarks he's got to get to, that if I told you what he's accomplished at this point, you would have been happy. No UNLV fan should have been happy. Nobody. And generally speaking, they can't be happy. But I don't think it matters. UNLV never cared about winning. And they don't care about winning today. They do not care. They care about their new facility. They care about their new stadium. They care about the optics. Now, all of a sudden, once they're into that, now you'll start to hear the winning. You'll all of a sudden start to hear the pressure, but it mattered very little, if not zero, what Coach Sanchez did up until next year.
And I don't think that, you know, when you're sitting around, you live in a local area, and Tom, I'm sure you see it with the local teams around you, even on the especially at the college level, where they do a lot of advertising and they're promoting the school's sports teams and, you know, this is the year Tony's going to make it to a bowl game. Everything's going to be right as we move into the 2020 season at Allegiant Stadium, where the capacity there is going to be 65,000, Tom. So think about that. Opening game out at Sam Boy, they had 10,000 people there. And I'll even go stretch further with the basketball program. They only have to fill 18,000 in Thomas & Mack. You got the T.J. Otzelberger era beginning. A lot of promotion about that. There was like 4,000 people at the opening game. So you're going to move into this cavernous football stadium that seats 65,000, you're not going to be able to fill a sixth of it?
Yeah, but they will, and here's why. They're going to be able to do that early on, Tim, because year one, everyone's going to want to go see the stadium.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you have, and that's why I'm thinking he's got to start winning next year. Year one, you think, okay, these people are stupid, and that's what they think about you guys, right? It doesn't matter what product we put on the field, they're going to come out here, they're going to pay money to come and see the new stadium. So the place will be filled up. And then, oh, by the way, if you happen to watch some winning football, maybe you'll stay for next year. And that's why Coach Sanchez's timeline starts next year. It will eventually get to that point where year one, yeah, start winning a little bit. Get to a bowl game in year one. And I'm talking about year one in the new stadium. Year two, now all of a sudden, you start moving up. We got to now keep these fans. Coach Sanchez's contract has not even begun yet, Tim. It starts next year.
I'm going to have DeMond clip that. That way, when they do announce he's coming back, we can play it and get credit for this instead of somebody else stealing it and saying that they were the first ones to say that, right? Because everybody in town, and you know this, Tom, you listen, they all think he's gone.
I can't see. I mean, listen, I've been on the track that he should have been gone right away. I was on the track of he should have been hired. I was one of the few. Yeah. And you saw how many people bashed. Well, you just don't know. Because you're from New York, you don't know local Vegas. Of course he should have been hired. Now all those same people are coming around to the idea that, well, maybe he should have been hired. Right? He's a high school coach, and that's what he is. Now all of a sudden they're coming around. And now all of a sudden everybody, oh, Sanchez is going to be fired. Tell you what, Coach Sanchez might be fired. I may be wrong. The reason I would be wrong would not be the reasons why they want him fired. The reason why I would be wrong is not because UNLV is going to move on to a new, fresh coach and build a program. It would be if they could get a splash name. And if they can get a splash name that's bigger than Coach Sanchez, well, same job, didn't he? He got the recruiting money. He got the donation money, I should say. He got the facility. He did what they hired him to do. I still believe that he's got one more year, though.
You mean a splash name like the unemployed Jim Mora Jr.?
Yeah, that would make sense. Look, I think Mora makes sense, right? I don't know if that's a big enough splash name. I think UNLV believes that they could go and dangle a Bob Stoop. I think that that's the kind of thinking that is coming from this program. Just from the names that we've heard coming out with the basketball program, and before Sanchez was hired, what they were thinking about for the football program. They believe they are bigger than they really are. And they are believing that we could go out there and get a huge splash name.
Tom, how about we stick with football? We'll do some NFL in hour two.
Sounds good to me.
It's the voice of Tom Barton, TomBartonSports.com. Tim Unglesby here with you on a Sunday night. Hour two on the way, NFL Week 10. What the hell happened to the New Orleans Saints today? That's what we're going to start with on the other side of it. It's Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.